Hofstetter versus City of Bellingham.
Morning, Your Honors. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
This is somewhat of a con. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. My name's Jeffrey A. Thigpen. I'm here on behalf of plaintiff Katie Hofstetter. The record here demonstrates this was somewhat of a convoluted case. But it got off on the wrong foot because the trial court was willing to accommodate the city's affirmative defense that the recreational use statute applied here, despite the fact that there was a sign above the area in the park where Katie Hofstetter had this horrible and tragic accident that warned people do not enter, and in fact also stated that entering this particular area of the park would be subject to a 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine.
Mr. Thigpen, I think the crux of your argument is whether or not the trial court erred by ruling that there were issues of fact on the application of the immunity, and it's my understanding that that was brought to a head by the city's motion for summary judgment. They were moving, among other things, but primarily here, for a finding that immunity applied, and that would have ended the case, at least with respect to whether or not the immunity applied. So in response to that, the record indicates that you argued and you submitted evidence raising issues of material fact. You didn't cross-move that you were entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law.
No. I think the record reflects there was a motion for partial summary judgment by the plaintiff.
Well, not the state, I think, moved first, didn't they?
I frankly wasn't involved in the case at that point, but I believe the city I think did move
first.
Right, but in addition, the plaintiff filed a separate, if I recall correctly, a separate motion for partial summary judgment that the recreational use statute had no applicability.
But many months and about a month before trial is when that happened. The court adopted plaintiff's position that there were issues of fact on the question of whether or not the park was opened or closed, which raises the issue of whether immunity applies. So the court ruled in plaintiff's favor. It was not until months later after discovery that plaintiff then brought a motion saying we're entitled to judgment as a matter of law, because there are no issues of fact, and you presented the park operation manager's affidavit, and the court said, no, I've already ruled on this. There are issues of fact, and you went to trial on it.
My recollection of the record is that both of these motions were considered at various times, but the plaintiff clearly presented the argument that the recreational use statute did not apply in this case, and you're right, presented evidence to show that it was not in dispute that they had this sign up that you can't go into this particular area.
Well, the point of it is you can't appeal a denial of summary judgment, and the issue went to trial, and the jury on the first question of immunity ruled or found in your favor, right?
Whether the recreational use statute, right. Whether they allowed outdoor recreation, that's correct. But as far as reviewability is concerned, I addressed that in my brief. This was essentially a ruling on an issue of law. It was a statutory interpretation about what does the word allow mean. And the city, despite this sign that says keep out, said, well, people were going in there anyway, so they were more or less turning a blind eye to that, what was going on, despite their sign up that said it's punishable by incarceration and a fine. Sure. That's the tricky issue in this case, and I recognize it. But if you scrutinize this record, you will see the whole, basically the trial became consumed by whether they were allowing people into this area. The city persistently maintained we did allow people in there. And so it diverted the whole trial from inhibited plaintiff's ability to present the case in a coherent manner and forced plaintiff to adopt the backup position that the condition was latent and artificial, known and dangerous, which was almost impossible argument to sell. So the presence of it in the trial polluted the whole trial process. The other, on the negligence issue, the court wouldn't give this instruction 38, which is a well-established common law principle that the knowledge of these employees should have been imputed to the employee.
Was that issue disputed?
Pardon me?
Was that issue disputed? I mean, did the city take the position that that they weren't, whatever the knowledge of their employees was, it wasn't imputed to them? Did the city take that position?
They didn't dispute it, but there's case law, In re Pouncey I cited, suggests it shouldn't be up to the lawyer to have to persuade the jury what the law is. And the courts didn't necessarily agree that was the law, but the city objected anyway, knee-jerk objection to this instruction that was not covered anywhere else and is totally separate from these issues about the recreational use statute. So,
but there was no argument by any party that was that the city was not if that knowledge was imputed to them, they didn't argue otherwise.
No, but how would the jury know? That if the employee knows, hey, we've got a bad situation on this trail, we better do something about it, and it's a low-level employee as opposed to a manager, how would they know that then, well, that makes the city knowledgeable about that condition? There'd be no way for them to know.
Thank you.
Good morning. Shane Brady on behalf of the City of Bellingham. And just initially, I want to address a couple of Your Honor's questions, and specifically Judge Lau's first. And the city did move for summary judgment, I want to say sometime in 2009. I think the record would clarify that. 6 months later, the city moved for summary judgment again on a different issue. It was more of a presumption of risk type issue. And then December of 2010, I believe, the plaintiff moved for partial summary judgment for the recreational immunity issue. And there were no cross motions when the city filed their motions. And on each ruling by Judge Snyder on the summary judgment issues, the orders that were presented to the court said that there were disputed facts. So there were no, he did not say this was solely an issue of law. The case law says if you're going to have a summary judgment denial reviewed, it has to be solely an issue of law. And the orders presented by the plaintiffs, attorneys, said there was a dispute of fact about this. And as Judge Leach said, the plaintiffs got what they wanted in this case was a trial. Judge Snyder found there were issues of fact, and they had a trial. They got the instructions to the jury on licensee and invitee, and at the end of the day, after weeks of trial, endless amounts of witnesses, including experts on park management, experts on human factors, medical experts, lengthy arguments, lengthy voir dire. The jury decided that Ms. Hofstetter was a licensee and that the city was not negligent. And this was a perfectly reasonable conclusion to come to by the jury and doesn't indicate any signs of confusion or any sort of prejudice that was going on in the trial. The jury verdict itself, if you look at it, the series of interrogatories in the jury's conclusion makes perfect sense in context of the case. And that by itself, I think, defeats the plaintiff's argument that there was any confusion or any corrosive effect in this trial. I would respond to that argument by saying it's, I would say, speculation, conjecture, that this affected the jury in any way. And it was represented in the briefs that the plaintiff was somehow handicapped by having to deal with all these facts and these issues of law. But guess what? There were other attorneys in the room for the city that had to deal with the same issues. That's why it was a little bit of a difficult trial in that respect. But just taking what Judge Schneider said, there were issues of fact, and so the city had to deal with those issues as well. So I don't see how the city was or how the plaintiff was more prejudiced or harmed or felt hamstrung by it more than the city was. And what's important here is that at the end of the day, I hate to use that phrase, but at the end of the day, there was no prejudice to the plaintiff, because as Your Honor pointed out, they got what they wanted. They got this case to a jury. They got the instructions on these alternative land use premises liability theories that the city did not agree with, that should have gone to the jury. And the jury ultimately found there was no negligence, which is perfectly reasonable if you read the jury instruction for licensee, which is instruction number 23 in the case, which says basically there's no breach of a duty in the licensee context if the licensee should have known or recognized a danger. And it's perfectly reasonable, looking at all the evidence and the exhibits in this case, that a park user would realize the dangers and risks associated with this natural environment at Whatcom Falls Park.
Mr. Brady, can I confirm you have a cross appeal, among other issues? The trial court refused to give your trespasser instruction, but I want to confirm that if we agree with you, and that is to affirm the jury's verdict, we need not reach your cross appeal. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's okay. That's the city's position on this appeal. I should have started with that, Your Honor. I apologize. And so if the court's going to affirm the court's verdict, or the jury's verdict, excuse me, then there's no need to reach the city's cross appeal.
Would you confirm for me as well that instruction 38 that counsel assigns error to the court's refusal to give was a modified instruction? It wasn't just a pure whip. It was a modified instruction.
And I will respond to that, and I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor. I was going to point that out as well. This wasn't just WPIC 50.01. It was 50.01 modified, if you look at the record. And it contained a bottom paragraph about imputed knowledge. The plain WPIC just has a paragraph about agency and regards to respondeat superior. As I pointed out in my brief, if you read the comments to that pattern instruction, it says this, and it's not ambiguous at all. It says, use this instruction in cases where there's an issue of agency, the agent should be vicariously liable, or the principal should be vicariously liable for the agent. That's what that instruction is for. And if you read the colloquy between the trial court and plaintiff's attorneys in this case, the trial court got it absolutely right. He said his intuition was, this isn't what this instruction is for. This is for vicarious liability. That's not an issue in this trial. This is an agency instruction. And so the trial court got that right. It's perfectly in tune with the case law and the instructions and the comments in the pattern instruction. And as Judge Spearman pointed out, this wasn't even contested by the city. The city never stood up and said, whatever this park worker knows, the city as an entity didn't know. That did not happen. Those words were not uttered at the trial. So it was really a non-issue in the trial, and nothing prevented plaintiff from arguing it. But besides, the instruction was being proposed for a use outside of what its purpose is, according to the pattern instruction. So it wasn't an error of law to not give that instruction. And as I said, the trial court absolutely got that ruling correct.
And I also confirm with you that he did not object to any of the other instructions, although he briefed them and assigned error to them.
Well, There were several mentioned in the initial brief, and I did take issue with some of the form of some of the objections. The objections made at the trial court and an appeal were different, and I don't believe there was an objection to just the recreational immunity instructions in general, other than their motion for summary judgment, which happened before the trial started. I don't know if I answered your question. But I just wanted to also point out here before I'm out of time to the court that the plaintiff's position is basically this sign is the authority on what the city's intent was and whether this part of the park was open or not. But really, it's just one piece of evidence in the trial. And you need to look at the trial in context and what the city witnesses said about this sign. And it's really a story. There's a story to tell about the sign and about the park because of this explosion that happened that brought the sign. And I don't want to belabor that. The sign is really one piece of evidence. You have just a mountain of other evidence from parks workers and parks employees and park users, frankly, who stated that nobody stopped them from going in there. This part of the park was open. There were thousands of visitors there every year. And so if you look at...
What's that argument, if I tell you that everybody on I-5 north of Seattle is going 75 miles an hour, there's a sign that says I can't go faster than 70, and somebody wants to cite me for going 70, so that's not the speed limit. They don't do anything about all these other folks going 75.
Well, it's different because significant number of parks employees there saying that that they allowed use, they never did anything about it. People there picking up, parks workers picking up trash, there's thousands of people in there using it, not at one time, obviously. But more importantly, the parks operations manager sent an email and testified in court that, look, on the day Ms. Hofstetter was there, we had made the decision not to take the sign down, but to keep it up as a quote-unquote warning sign. That this area was, quote, part of the park. Let's leave the sign up as a warning, as sort of a deterrent, because they didn't like people going in there in general for, denuding the area, vegetation, that sort of thing. So we have a clear, pronouncement from...
Warning or a hope that a few people will read it and obey it?
Well, as I said, I think...
It says stay out.
I think it does stay out. It says... park area closed, hazardous area, I believe is what it says, and it goes on. But I think that's true, reading in between the lines, that they would rather not people go in there for vegetation, denuding the area. It used to be very green in that area. It's not anymore.
You kind of want to have it both ways. You want to tell people they can't come in here, but then you want to say it's open because we're immune if you get hurt using it?
I think the city wants to have it both ways. I think the city... is entitled to recreational immunity because it's part of the park, which is not a matter for the city's cross appeal. But if the court's going to find she's not allowed in there, then she's a trespasser. But the point is that the evidence shows that this is different from the example you brought up with the speed limit sign, because we have pronunciations from the park staff and the operations manager saying that's not the intent of the sign. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you that maybe it wasn't the best idea just to leave it up if you didn't care if people went in. But that's the decision they made. Well, if you're talking about a statute, but this is. But I like I said, there's a story to that sign. If you look at the entire picture of evidence in this trial, the indication is that people were allowed in there, and that the park operations manager saw this as a warning to people. And it's just one piece of evidence. It's not controlling on. Well, I disagree with the court's interpretation, but thank you for your time.
Thank you. That's the essence of what went wrong in this case, is that the city wanted, and it all hinges on this word allow. And it was consistently pointed out to the trial court that the recreational use statute must be strictly construed. And the city wanted it to say allow means, even if we do it by default or by not enforcing our own rule that says if you go in here, you can be arrested. And there were citations issued in there. Then they turn around and say, well, we really did allow people to go in there. It's a specious argument. This sidetracked this whole trial. And if you scrutinize the record in this case, it literally consumed this whole trial. and it forced the plaintiff to try to make this unpersuasive argument that this was a latent condition, an artificial condition. As far as this imputing business, this is not respondeat superior. It's imputing knowledge. That instruction stated a common law principle. Authority was presented to the trial court, and to just assume, well, the jury's going to know if Mr. Rothenbuehler, the park's naturalist, saw this as a bad situation, that therefore, well, then the city knows that. Jurors, with all due respect, may not be that sophisticated to understand that.
Is there anything to prevent plaintiff's counsel from making that argument?
The court said you could argue it, but for attorneys to get up and argue what the law is, the jury could be saying, well, the judge didn't tell us that. How do we know that is the law? Plaintiff's counsel should not have been put in a position to have to explain the law to the jury.
Thank you.
Thank you.